Welcome to Family Ties. This is Julia Avery, and here's my co-host and sister,
Kelly. Hi, everybody. We're back.
Yeah. So today we are doing a two-parter episode on the same topic. It's just so layered that we want to be able to spend enough time on it to really delve into some of the different points. So today we're going to be kind of walking through the issue, and then part two we'll be kind of going over our ideas for solutions, etc. So before we begin, just wanted to address the current COVID crisis. Wanted to thank those who are on the front lines for putting themselves out there for a greater cause and putting themselves and their families at risk. In addition to all of the families, Kelly and I both want to extend our sympathies to anyone who has been affected by this or knows anyone that has either caught it or passed because of it. We just want to let you know that everyone's in our thoughts, and we wish there was more we could do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just one of those things where this is the weirdest thing I've ever lived through in my life, you know? Isn't that weird just to think about how this will be in the history books someday, and we're going to look back with even more shame than we feel now with how we've dealt with this?
Yeah. So in our lifetime, Kelly, we've dealt with war. Mm-hmm. We've dealt with a terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
We've dealt with a pandemic. We've dealt with a housing crisis.
Yep. And guess what? Next up, meteor.
Woo! Aliens. Independence Day.
I don't know about that, but... Julie! Are you an alien person?
Wow.
Not like an actual alien, but like an alien believer?
Oh, so I don't believe in the little green men, but I do believe that there's other life out there.
Okay, well, speaking of life out there, let's talk more about this pandemic.
So, yeah, our topic today is kind of along the lines of the effects of isolation and everybody quarantining and the effects of how that has an impact on people's social lives. Not just now, but the way we handle our social lives in general. And this is just further emphasizing that, so to speak.
Yes.
Before we begin, though, I wanted to let everybody know to go visit our website with all the information on it. Just in case you can't make it to the end of the episode with the website information, I'm going to shout it out in the beginning every time.
Julia, they're going to listen to every last second, every last drop.
Okay. I hope so.
Okay. Go ahead.
You can visit our website, www.thefamilytiespodcast.com. It has links to all of our social platforms. It's got posts. It's got blogs and information about Kelly and myself. So if you're interested in knowing more about us, go check out and join the family.
Yes, join the family. So, Julia, you have been quarantined, like, pretty hardcore.
Yes.
So, you feel this really acutely. But, like, for me, I am still working. My work, the brewery, is considered a essential, you know, because people still got to drink, especially during times of trouble. Mm-hmm. So I've been pretty busy at work. And the one thing I am noticing is that even with that, like, I'm going to work and I'm just coming home. And I've been dealing a lot with loneliness. And I think that's why we wanted to talk about it today, is because this exacerbates that. And for those of us like me who have anxiety and depression, those things really kick into high gear when you have like a feeling of isolation. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going to get into today with some actual science. So this is going to count as our science and psychology episode. So we kind of keep combining topics. It's just going to happen. But this is going to be, it's going to sound more psychological, but there is real science to back up these numbers. So,
Kelly, why don't you give us some of these facts and percentages and numbers and data? Give it to us.
Well, before we do that, mm-hmm. let's just give a shout out to those people who have to be all alone, like one person living in a house by themselves and they're quarantined. Imagine that, because I have three roommates. And we've got dogs, and that has helped a lot. But even at that point, you know, with me having people here, I would have thought at this point in the pandemic, me and my roommates, who we all get along really, really well, that we would have started like, oh, you know, a book club or a movie night or everybody share a meal together. But we've kind of ended up being more, or I'm seeing just as much isolation where people are just kind of doing things in their rooms, closed doors. It's not what I thought the possibilities could be. So it's really been hitting me hard because I'm a very social creature. And it's difficult for me because I like sharing time and meals and just little moments because we grew up in a big family. Like, I'm used to being surrounded by people. I was like, okay, so this is affecting me. Community is vital for my emotional well-being. How does this translate into the real world? And I looked up this article. It's called Social Isolation and Loneliness in Older People Pose Health Risks. So there are actual health risks that go along with being isolated and lonely. And this just starts by just saying that human beings are social creatures. Our connection to others enables us to survive and thrive. Yet as we age, many of us are alone more often than when we were younger, leaving us vulnerable to social isolation and loneliness. And related health problems such as cognitive decline, depression, and heart disease. So fortunately, there are ways to counteract these negative effects. And so this first episode is going to be about us talking about the negative effects and the science. And then the second part will be us kind of giving you some ideas and solutions to tackle that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. So I think, you know, in relation to that, community, you know, is vital, not just for my well-being, but it says for everyone's. The National Institute on Aging continues with, I quote, "Social isolation and loneliness don't always go together. About 28% of older adults in the U.S. live alone, but many of them are not lonely or socially isolated. But at the same time, some people feel lonely despite being surrounded by family and friends." And that goes to show that research has linked social isolation and loneliness to higher risks for a variety of physical and mental conditions like high blood pressure, heart disease, obesity, a weakened immune system, with anxiety, depression, cognitive decline, Alzheimer's, and even death. That's crazy.
It is.
Just from loneliness.
You hit on an interesting point there that you can be surrounded by people but still feel lonely. And what's really driving that? So we might be surrounded by people, but I feel like the emphasis really is on the way our relationships are formed and how we keep them up. How are we interacting with each other? Are we just sitting around the table on our phones and around people technically but feeling lonely? Or are we actively participating in activities with each other, helping each other, and still feeling lonely? What are the activities that really surround these social interactions?
You hit the nail on the head there with the technology part. Like, what role has technology begun to play in how we are handling this? And of course, it's great in some regards. You know, we have all this Netflix to binge watch things and to kind of remain distracted. But people who are staying home with their children and families, is everybody just still sitting in their rooms, doors closed?
Well, the thing is, people were doing this before the pandemic. I've told you this before, Kelly. I feel like social distancing was a thing before it was a thing.
It really was. People just didn't realize it.
Yeah.
But you know what really causes people to do the opposite of what they're doing is if someone in authority tells them they can't do something, then all of a sudden that's all they want to do. All they want to do is be outside. Mm-hmm. They're like, stay indoors. And then all of a sudden you just look out and there's like bikers, there's families, there's like people everywhere. And I'm like, what?
Okay.
So it took people advising you to stay home for you to actually go outside and leave your house. Okay. It's reverse psychology, guys. That's not how this is supposed to go.
When you're not supposed to do something, your instinct is to do it. And you and I both have talked about this before. We have that problem with authority.
Definitely.
So, and it's.
I mean, the reason I've been seeing all these people outside is because I've been out on my bike. So.
I mean, I have not been 100% quarantined. I still have to make money somehow, so there's some nights where I'll go out and do Uber delivery, food delivery. Mm-hmm. I wear my mask and I wear gloves. I've had some hand sanitizer, ran out, and I couldn't find any more at the store because bulk shoppers, you know. Anyway, so I've gone out a little bit, but I'm not going out and trying to like gather with groups of friends. I'm not trying to party.
Well, and just to kind of clarify for everybody, I feel like the main goal of this particular double-parter is to kind of give you a sense of, yes, what we're dealing with now, but also provide encouragement and facts and ideas for how to deal with it now, and also how to go forward in the future and learn to be more connected with others, yeah, because it is so key and vital. And in this day and age where technology does rule, I think we all kind of need a reminder. And this has kind of been the one blessing with this pandemic, is that I think it's starting to make us realize that our interactions with others are more necessary than we thought before.
Yeah, exactly. Now we're craving it.
So the doctor who I quoted from that article, his research found that being alone and loneliness are different but related, like we talked about. Social isolation is the objective physical separation from other people living alone, while loneliness is the subjective distressed feeling of being alone or separated. And that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. It's possible to feel lonely while among other people, and you can be alone yet not feel lonely. We discussed that, and I think it's definitely something I didn't think I'd feel, and I do. If I didn't have Thomas, my boyfriend, then I would be truly in the pit of despair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas. He's such a babe. Let's see if I can say this right. The Cacioppo evolutionary theory of loneliness is that loneliness automatically triggers a set of related behavioral and biological processes that contribute to the association between loneliness and premature death in people of all ages. So not just old people, but everyone. So losing a sense of connection and community changes a person's perception of the world. Mm-hmm. Someone experiencing chronic loneliness feels threatened and mistrustful of others, which activates a biological defense mechanism, says Dr. PhD Steve Cole.
I think that's extremely important, and that's another point that brings up the health problems that are become a result of this kind of thing, and it's triggered by mental illness as well, because and it's all physical, so it's if in our minds it's all mental, but we need to discuss how that mental aspect starts to affect the physical body and
physically manifesting itself. Yeah.
It's all a chemical makeup. So the more you're suppressed, lonely, and start to become depressed, that triggers chemical levels in your body that start to affect your health, your well-being, like whether it be cortisol levels for stress that start to trigger mm-hmm. and offset other important chemicals that maybe throw off serotonin, etc. It's like a domino effect. It starts really impacting everything else, and it only gets worse. If you don't do anything or take steps to correct that problem, then it can lead to further health problems.
Well, Jillie, you're not even a doctor, and you hit the nail on the head there, because Dr. Cole also says that the biology of loneliness can accelerate the buildup of plaque in arteries, help cancer cells grow and spread, and promote inflammation in the brain, leading to Alzheimer's. Loneliness promotes several different types of wear and tear on the body. People who feel lonely may also have weakened immune cells, which is bad news bears right now, mm-hmm. That have trouble fighting off viruses, which makes them more vulnerable to some infectious diseases. So
that's a scary
that's a scary thought right now.
Being quarantined and getting lonely could make you more susceptible to the virus if presented with it.
Yeah. In addition to having FaceTiming with your family and friends, or, you know, just calling or texting, I would suggest more of a face-to-face, like a FaceTiming, yeah, because it makes it feel a little bit more personal. You will tend to talk a little bit longer, have more meaningful conversations. And speaking of that, we're going to be having I think all five of us girls are going to be talking all together on Saturday to celebrate Janet's birthday. Yay! On WhatsApp. Since she's in Germany, we take any moment that we can at this point. Yeah. And I haven't heard from her in forever. And it's good to have those moments to really be thankful for what we have and for those who are in our lives. This article also suggests that, quote, working for a social cause or purpose with others who share your values and are trusted partners puts you in contact with others and helps develop a greater sense of community. That we can't do right now. So just write that down in your book for things to get back to once things are back to normal. But that's just one thing. And then I also found this other really interesting thing. It's on ResearchGate website, loneliness, its correlations and associations with health behaviors and outcomes. They're always really long titles for scientific articles. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, is this a story in itself? Quote, it says, there is an association between feeling lonely and alcohol consumption, mm-hmm. hazardous drinking and smoking, and poorer health. Working for the alcohol industry, it is not slowing down, but revving up. I think it's just one of those things where that and the recreational marijuana, those are just like essential for most people because they're coping mechanisms.
Yeah. And it makes sense why people lean back on that, because if they aren't able to change their situation, then it's kind of hopeless. And chemical dependency is kind of help deal with that for yourself, relying on alcohol.
Do you know what I'm depending on, Julia, right now?
Puppy?
Yes, but sugar. Sugar specifically. So I'm working on that because I'm realizing just how much of an emotional tie I have to that.
Yes.
And so eating can be thrown in here as well.
Yes.
All this affecting, boredom. Just like, what am I going to do? Oh, I might as well have a snack.
Yes.
Am I hungry? Nope, but I need a snack.
I know you're not on social media right now, Kelly, and that's great. I wish to do the same, but...
Oh my gosh, it's so wonderful. But I was thinking about that earlier.
People have made videos of themselves, or jokes about constantly eating throughout the day. And there's this one guy, my favorite is actually this guy who walked to the refrigerator with his blanket, like a cape, as he was just like trudging to the fridge, put something out, and then walked back down the hall and he disappeared down the hall. And then the next time he came out, it was like he had wrapped it up to look like this dress. And it was all tucked to look like a dress. And he was like doing this fashion walk to the fridge. And then he'd stop, pose, go to the fridge, get something else, go back. And then he'd come out and he'd have fixed the blanket a different way. And it was all like this fashion show, like constantly going back and forth to the fridge. It's freaking awesome. But yeah, you're right though. Sorry, sidetrack there. But your
hey,
point.
Julia.
Fridge.
That story was great.
We're bored. We're making videos of ourselves bulk eating.
And guess what? That still didn't make me want to get back on social media.
That wasn't the goal, so.
Okay, I know, but I was just clarifying.
I was just trying to let you know other people are posting about this, so your point about the bulk eating is definitely a real thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to stop buying sugar stuff, like candy and things.
I love sugar.
And then I'll be really sad. I know.
There should be a rehab facility for sugar addiction.
That, no shit, Julia, because I would go to that in a heartbeat.
I need that.
I just need someone to just tell me no. Like, I can't tell myself no, so I just need someone to, like...
Yes, need to be in a rehab facility where you can't leave. The food is provided to you. You cannot leave to go secretly buy candy. Eat it while everyone's
no vending night. Machines here.
I am definitely guilty of shame eating.
Oof.
Oh man.
Well, let's talk about something both sad, tragically sad, and then something that's the optimistic side of it. There's this other article I found that is my favorite, one of the ones that I kind of read through on this topic. It was on HuffPost, and it's called, I don't know what the title was, I forgot, I didn't write it down.
Gosh,
but it discusses, and I quote, how loneliness is a big issue in the country of 127 million, which has the oldest population in the world, Japan. By 2024, 40% of Japan's inhabitants will be solo dwellers because, their life expectancy is the highest in the world and they end up finding themselves alone, at these really old ages. So the consequences of this has been a rise in kudakoshi, people dying alone and remaining undiscovered for long periods of time. There is an estimated, and I'm still quoting, guys, I'm sorry, I should be better about letting you know when I'm starting to quote, but they say that there's an estimated 30,000 of these lonely deaths per year. But companies that clean apartments when kudakoshis are discovered say the number could be 2 to 3 times higher.
Aww.
Isn't that sad?
That's tragic.
Yeah. Just imagine you had a family. Some of them, have kids and families, and this is just how it ends up being. But this social phenomenon, and I'm quoting again, is a public health risk and concern linked to depression, dementia, and heart disease. Businesses see an opportunity to help through technology. Enter robot seal companions. This is where it gets good, guys. So don't be too sad for too long.
Yeah, I'm depressed.
Pero, I know, I'm so sorry. Pero, a robotic seal, at Tokyo's Silver Wing Care Facility, aimed at providing residents with therapy and social interactions, is something that they're using to kind of reach these people. So residents talk to the seals about everyday events such as the weather, and then it serves, the little seals serve as a starting point for conversations between residents. I love that.
That's adorable.
And there's such cute pictures of these seals sitting on tables, these little bitty furry, like, stuffed seals. And I just think technology can play a good and bad role.
Yeah.
And here's where technology is helping.
Yeah. I do wish that it could be real human interaction, but it is really sweet at the same time. I just wish we didn't have to resort to technology.
Mm-hmm. Thomas and I had this discussion where in the future you're going to be able to actually, like, I'm using air quotes but you can't see it guys, take a vacation somewhere or, you know, go walking about the streets of Venice or something.
Stuff that you kind of see on the Black Mirror show. And
yeah, I would rather do it in person, myself, a personal physical experience, even if it's less dreamy than what you get in that kind of virtual world.
I wouldn't enjoy it as much just because I knew it wasn't real. I'd already have set it up in my brain not to accept it and not to enjoy it as a reality. It's not the same.
I mean, in the future, it will be more realistic to where, you know, it's kind of tricking your brain into thinking that you're actually there. But I don't know. Like, I'm not super well-versed on this.
I want to touch, I want to see and hear real stuff,
yeah,
tangible things.
So I'm going to be one of those people who doesn't deal with all this increasing technology very well. I'm so old school. Taking my Enneagram test, guys, you need to take it. It's amazing. It's a scientific research that breaks down your answers into telling you if you're more of a achiever, an enthusiast. I'm the helper. So for me, communication and friendships and people, focusing on others is what brings me joy and happiness. And so in a time like this, like, all I want to do is I want to play a game. I want to have fixed dinner for people or share, like, just a conversation or I don't know. It's been great, though, because, Julia, this has forced me to actually be outside more. So Thomas and I were taking a walk the week before last. And this is really good news, guys, to me. I'm pretty excited about this.
I know what you're about to say.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
This will give you some time to think about your hooray, Julia. So Thomas and I, we took this long walk, and I think we spent a good hour talking about this subject of loneliness and the science behind it. And he had some other really interesting things to say, which I've forgotten now because, you know, I can't keep anything in my head for very long. But I was just telling him how much I felt isolated, and I just, like, my friend MB is gone right now. She's out of the state with family, and so we're not talking as much because she's busy with her family. I think probably unplugging a bit. So it's hard for me to feel this isolated. And we walked back to the house and we were almost at my yard. And I saw my neighbor out in her yard. She was heading out the door with her dog for a walk. And so I stopped and I kind of chatted with her for a second. And come to find out, I mean, we were standing in our own yards, kind of talking 12 feet away from each other. But I found out that she was also raised in a very, very kind of cultishly right-wing upbringing like I was. And, you know, there were a lot, I think there were 5 kids in her family. So right off the bat, we were finding out all these things about each other, how we both suffer from anxiety and depression and loneliness, and how this is really difficult for us during this time. And she was so cool, and we exchanged numbers and we've kind of messaged back and forth, and we have both left little packages on each other's doorsteps with, like, I left her some beer and some candy, and she left us little snacks and things.
Didn't
but it's
she ask
it's
if
so
you needed
nice
anything?
Yes, she said she was going to Target and asked if we needed something, and I just told her I couldn't find those Swiffer wet jet pads anywhere. And she's like, oh yeah, I'll look. She went to 3 stores to try and find those pads for me. I did not know until afterwards, but she brought some of her own and left them on the door. And I was like, this is what I've been missing. It took this moment in time in this pandemic to really make a good connection with somebody.
That's crazy. And I think that she was right next door the entire time. It's just
the whole time.
Shit. But
what's your hooray?
My hooray is I always felt alone, even with friends and family. I've always had a problem with feeling like I'm lovable. I have serious insecurities, and those drive me to have doubt in my support system, doubt in whether friends or family really love me. And that's a problem I'm dealing with every day. But right now, I have proof that I have a support system that really does care about me. I've had we keep up, and your huge support emotionally, even though we can't be together physically. Then there's also Heather and Kevin, who've offered their home and are helping me just kind of rebuild my life. I was getting really depressed with my job, and it was making me get mentally and physically worse. Like, I have been on a decline for years. This job is seriously stress-inducing, and it doesn't impact everybody the same, because some people thrive off of that kind of environment. But it was such a toxic work environment, and I did not thrive. I did not thrive there. I did a great job at what I did. I wasn't leaving because I was bad at my job. I was leaving because the environment, I cannot walk in and work with those people, work for those managers anymore in the conditions that were there. And in order to do that, I wasn't financially able to really carry it out on my own. And that's always been the kicker, is being financially capable of making those changes myself. And so I've had a lot of support through this move. Heather and Kevin have let me stay with them so I can restart my life, and that was proof to me that okay, I'm gonna take people up on their offer to help. And it's really hard to do, but now that I've done it, it's proof to me that they really do love me, and it's huge.
That is huge. And I'm really envious, because I remember spending Christmas at Heather's and how we all were so unplugged. Like, days at a time, we just sat there and we did puzzles and played games together and just talked and focused on each other. I think we watched like one thing on TV the whole time.
Yeah, so, and we didn't even sit down for the entire thing. It was like that Christmas movie, the Scrooge.
The Christmas Carol. Yeah. Yeah, that classic that everybody knows about.
Yeah, the one that I couldn't name.
Yeah, that one.
We didn't even finish it together. That's how little we were plugged in.
Yeah. And I think it's good to have people around you, that support system, especially when you deal with depression the way Jillian and I do. I think it's something that as Americans, we're not as in tuned with accepting mental health as being as important as our physical outward health.
It's been a stigma.
And it's one and the same.
And there's still stigma around it. There are companies, due to HR reasons, have medical plans put in place. So if you are dealing with it, you can go to HR, you can get that support and not necessarily just lose your job because of it. But there's still the stigma, where it's almost like people still don't believe it. If they haven't personally dealt with it or have that issue themselves, it's hard for them to believe that it's real. And it seems like it's just a problem person and they wish they could fire them. And so it's still a stigma. Yes, we have things in place now to kind of help with it, but the stigma is definitely still there.
It's true. I think it's just one of these things where it took us having a mentally ill mother who was abusive emotionally and physically, when you just have to kind of realize, I could end up like this, but I also want to make sure I don't, and taking it seriously and kind of taking account and putting as much money and effort into our minds and the health of our minds is so vitally important. Sorry, I'm flipping through this book. I sound distracted, Julia, but I read this book, guys. It's called The Little Book of Luca by Mike Viking, the guy who wrote the Little Book of Huga. I believe the W is with a V, Viking.
No, the book's name.
Luca, yeah. Luca? It's in small print. Huga, Luca, yeah. And Luca stands for happiness, so it's a secret.
I said likey.
It's okay. It's okay. Of course you would. That's awesome.
I wouldn't have thought it was Luca.
I didn't either. I just looked at the pronunciation below. I didn't make that up myself.
Wow.
But so I'm flipping through this because there's some something about depression that I really wanted to mention, but I came across this one thing. This is happiness tip, create bonus grandparents. So we all, like what Julia was talking about when we were discussing Japan and the old people, is that adopt a grandparent type of thing. Aww. So it says, we all benefit from relationships across generational divides. Consider who might make good bonus grandparents or just a senior buddy for you. Just talking about how important it is to kind of give them a sense of family and purpose if they seem,
like the older you get, you kind of get discarded.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that's a big fear of mine.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that?
Oh yeah. Huge. And it's partly why, like, I've always romanticized the idea of not living long, of dying young and not having to ever deal with aging or being an elder, because it does scare me. And for instance, we've got our grandparents that I'd like to see, and they mm-hmm. have been on a decline for a while. And I know that there's a lot of back and forth between their kids, you know, our dad and his siblings on what to do with them. And that is just some of the callousness that I've heard, you know, trickle down through, you know, through dad and his experience on the calls. Just the divide between the siblings on what to do, it's like terrifying. You know, he doesn't go into like who says what, so I have no idea which one is trying to do what. But it's still like, I know that there are some that are like nursing home. There's some that are like at home care. Let them die in a home that they had built and let them be with people. But then there's some that it just seems callous. And it's hard for me to imagine being so out of it that I can't even decide what happens to me. And my kids are arguing over whether I get taken to a fucking nursing home or what. It's just terrifying.
That's a totally different subject I'd like us to cover at some point, about just how terrible our nation's programs are for the elderly and just how much money it costs. Just an average person, like, I couldn't take care of either of my parents with my finances. Mm-hmm. So just kind of putting it in that perspective of why we are falling so short for not just the older generation, but even for prenatal care and all, pretty much everything health related. We just suck, guys.
That could be for our global issues and
issues episode. Yeah. Stay tuned, guys. But I found what I was looking for. Yeah. On page 154, he says, depression is a disease, but it is treatable. Sadly, there is a lot of social stigma around mental illness in South Korea, is one of the main things he's kind of referencing in this particular section, as in many other countries, which results in a lack of treatment, sometimes with disastrous consequences. So out of the 28 OECD countries, don't really know what that is, guys, no, sorry. But South Korea ranks 27th when it comes to the consumption of antidepressants. Denmark ranks 7th. Does this mean that Danes are more depressed than Koreans? No, it just means they're getting some sort of treatment. Whether medication is the right sort of treatment is up for discussion, but it is a good thing to be a society in which treatment for mental illness is available and affordable, subsidized by the government, in which the stigma around mental illness has been reduced sufficiently that people feel able to seek treatment. We grew up in a household where mental health was completely ignored, like a figment of your imagination.
Yep, and it's still kind of handled that way. When I've brought up some of my issues to, like, dad, he'll be like, still really think that? And I'm like, and then it becomes like a spiritual thing that, you know, your mind is at unrest because you're not spiritually in tune anymore, or you've fallen out spiritually. And that is the reason why you have an imbalance. And it's like, no, science, medicine.
So that I don't sidetrack this conversation completely, I'm gonna just sidestep around that one, even though it really, really upsets me and like gets really,
yeah, that could
like
be an
under
entire
my skin.
Episode on its
yeah, because I mean, guys, we can't overstate enough that our whole upbringing was so fucked. It is amazing that we have an original thought in our heads, whether it be right or wrong. I mean, we don't claim to have any answers, but I think it's important to be open about our health. And just like he said, the Danes are 7th in the world for consumption of antidepressants. I need to look into see where the U.S. lies, but I think he mentions it at some point in the book.
Yeah.
It is a must read. It will totally, totally shift your perspective on what's important and what the role of happiness is to everyone and how important that is just for so many things. I think off the top of my head, I can think of our trusting others, relationships, even money, our relationship with money and how that affects happiness. We'll discuss that next time. Learning from people who kind of don't necessarily have it all figured out, but are the happiest country in the world consistently on a regular basis, measurable basis. This guy who is a CEO of the Happiness Research Institute, he knows a thing or two about happiness.
I love that.
Isn't that amazing? It does. It is. Yes. I think it's important for us to kind of reevaluate a lot. But Julia, movies. You pick a movie. I pick a movie where we feel like it really encapsulates loneliness and why we feel that it's important today. And you can start because you had a really great one.
Yay! So my movie pick is Ad Astra, the more recent film with Brad Pitt where he's in space. And he ends up meeting with his father, and they both come to terms, or he really comes to terms with how his isolation and the loneliness has pushed other people away. And just the movie's beautiful, and it really, you feel lonely with him as he's out there in space. Like you feel it.
Somebody who's been trained to suppress their feelings to the degree that he has, you know, you think, okay, this of anybody, this guy's got it. Like, he's in a situation where he is completely just alone and it's out of his control. And just suddenly, the memories that start flooding back to him and him, I think it's also about him rediscovering his humanity.
Yeah, I completely agree. And sometimes those bigger situations kind of push that out of you. And once you condition yourself for so long to suppress those feelings and try to ignore the problem, you become a ticking time bomb. At some point, you come to that turning point like he did, where you're like, wow, something has to change. Something's going to...
Kind of like, if I'm ever lucky enough to see another human being again, I will tell them I love them.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's a... Not to make you guys feel even more lonely, but I think it's so important that we realize just how important each and every person in our lives are. And I also think that it's a great example of this father who was seen as some kind of, and I'm not going to ruin anything, but seen as some kind of hero. Mm-hmm. It sets this tone for Brad Pitt where he's like, I have to be exceptional.
Yeah.
And his whole goal became to be perfect and exceptional and good at what he does. And sure, he may be good at it, but I don't really know to what extent his character actually loves what he does. But it causes him to miss out on life mm-hmm. around him, like real life. So I think it's also a cautionary tale about how we as Americans approach our careers and our parents kind of pushing us to be exceptional.
That, and I've got another point to tack on to that, is movies help me realize that my problems aren't just my problems, and they're not the worst problems out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I love about movies, that it helps me see outside of myself. And the nice thing about this is that even though the topic is loneliness, you're not the only one. So many people deal with loneliness, and not just loneliness, but any other mental hindrance or mental issue that really changes or has an effect on your quality of life. You're not alone. I think it's important to watch things that are difficult to see and sit and watch, because it's helpful to see outside yourself and also know that you're not the only one dealing with it.
Can I also make just, this is a stab in the dark. This is like my own interpretation. So I also feel like this is that movie is like a good statement for how in the past we've approached male masculinity and you're supposed to suppress your feelings. You're supposed to become more of a robot. And it just kind of shows how not only does that impact your relationships with other people, it impacts your emotional well-being, your mental health. And we're not meant to be robots, man or woman. And we are meant to be interacting with each other in a healthy manner. And if you just are kind of taught to shut it all down, it's going to explode. Like you said, it's going to come to the surface in some manner or other, and it's going to be destructive. It's never going to reveal itself in a positive way.
No. So what was your movie?
It was Blade Runner 2049. Is it 2040 or 2049? Oh, God. Guys, I'm so sorry. It's the new one.
You sound like me trying to recall something and tell somebody about something I've just seen or whatever, and I forget all the important things, and they're like, good story. I have no idea.
Nice job, Jillie. Well, nice job, Kelly, on this one. It's Ryan Gosling is my favorite. I'm going to call him, this is like just something I made up, my favorite silent movie actor. I feel like he doesn't have to say a word. You could go through 30 minutes of no dialogue with that guy.
Like the movie Drive was a great example of what you're talking about.
Him and Carey Mulligan. Yeah. All you have to do is have a tight shot on their faces. That's all that I need. I've never seen the ability to this extent to tell a story without words. But with Blade Runner, I don't know if you've seen the first one. To me, it's also a lot about loneliness and the human condition, but this one specifically, I think, is a great representative of that sci-fi. So, you know, you're talking about virtual reality, you're talking about him. Here's the thing. I don't want to ruin anything, so let's just pretend I don't know what happens. There's a possibility that his character could be a replicant, which if you've seen the originals, you know what that means. But he's out there, you know, having to get rid of the other replicants. So kind of like with Harrison Ford's character in the original, he's meant to take out certain replicants that are still out there. They look just like humans, act just like humans, but they're not. They're these robotic kind of manifestations. But he learns throughout the movie that there is humanity in them, and they're really rich in their feelings. And then we kind of have the caveat towards the end, like, is Harrison Ford a replicant also? Shocker.
Plot twist.
Ooh. But with Ryan Gosling, you know, he's pretty much just a machine working, but we're also still seeing that he has these feelings of loneliness. He's got this virtual reality girl, and how much he relies upon that, and how sad and lonely he is. Like, he doesn't even seem to really fully realize the extent of his isolation in like a very modern, futuristic world where everything tends to separate people from people more and more and more and more.
Do you think you kind of agree with me where a lot of people, more people than we even think, deal with issues that should be treated, who don't even think they have an issue, who honestly don't acknowledge or believe it, and it's just been something they've dealt with for all of their life, and it's just a thing, and they don't think of it as a real condition to get treated.
Well, I think that's the whole point that this guy Mike in this book is making about, just because one country is using more antidepressants doesn't mean that this country who's like 29th doesn't have as much problems as them. It just means that they're less comfortable detailing it and going to someone for help, because it took me almost a whole lifetime to realize that it was okay to realize. Like, I mean, I spent a good 12 years like so involved in someone else's depression that I didn't realize how miserable in my head that I was. The anxiety, like if someone 15 years ago had asked me, are you an anxious person, I would have been like, nah. It's been crippling since I was a child, but I was unable to see it and acknowledge it because we were kind of told to ignore it. So imagine how much happier we could have been our whole lives. So it is so important that we see it for what it is, and then we realize that we need, especially for people who suffer from severe chronic depression, is the need for a community of people who know what they're dealing with. So ideally, other people with anxiety or depression who you can go to and be like, okay, I'm going through this, and have that support system, because it will decrease our chances of suicide, harming ourselves, or overeating, you know, just out of eating our feelings. It's a thing. So like with you and I, it's so important that we be open with each other. And I'll just come right out and say it. The past couple of days, I went into a really deep, deep, dark depression, and Thomas had never seen me like that. I mean, the other night I was crying. I won't even go into why, but it wasn't even something huge that set me off. So I can go, I guess my temper is like dad's. I can go forever and ever and ever. Things pile up, no reaction. Then it just takes one tiny little thing to start knocking over those dominoes. Mm-hmm. And then I'm mad. Then it's a raging mad. Even, you know, silently in my head, but it's a rage.
Yeah.
And
your anger so weird. Is displaced.
Yeah. And sadness. Yeah. Depression. It comes in that form for me as well. I've been really happy lately, you know, reading this book, you know, doing a lot of mindfulness and headspace. I've been really in a peaceful place and probably the most healthy mentally ever. But it just took this one thing to just set it off. And then I started thinking about everything that had been upsetting me lately. And I was crying uncontrollably. And Thomas didn't know where it came from. You know, he doesn't understand that you know why I'm crying just as much as I do. It's just one of those things where we have to be open to discussing it. Yeah. And we talked about it.
And it's not to feel sorry for yourself, because I know that there are those people out there who consider people who are open about it as people who are seeking attention. And that's, there are people who do seek attention. So that is not 100% incorrect. But for those of
you know someone like that.
Yes.
Yes.
But that does not apply to everyone and to a majority of people who deal with mental illness. Do not discount what people are saying because you assume they're just trying to get attention. It takes a lot to be able to talk about it in the first place. And it's important to talk about it, because how can you confront a problem head on without being 100% honest and open about it? And identifying what the issue is. If you're silent about it and you don't acknowledge it within yourself, you're just going to be miserable forever. I'm a solution person. I like solutions.
Yes. Yes. And I know that my antidepressant medication isn't a one-stop solution.
Oh, no.
It takes so much more work than that and real mental stretching. But I propose that we leave encouragement to everyone out there who listens, that if you deal with anxiety or depression, please feel free to personally message us or use any of the social medias to kind of share your own story and to maybe even create a small community for now and later that we can kind of encourage each other and really promote some mental well-being.
Yeah, what I hope that kind of comes out of our podcast and the platform that we're going to have, you know, our title is The Family Ties for obvious reasons, because we're family.
Yes, she's my sister.
Right. But to take that a step further and extend our platform to become a bigger family, to provide a safe place for people who also have issues that they'd either like to be addressed, have been dealing with their whole life, or maybe have a new issue or have similar issues to those that we have, just a safe place to share it with. And if you want it private, you can just email it to us and let us know, not share it. But I really hope that this becomes a helpful platform and tool for people to become a family across the globe and to find solutions to problems, to be open to addressing the problems, because you can't find a solution until you address the problem, and not feel shameful or afraid to speak out about it.
Yeah. No matter how dark it seems, someone else has had something way worse. And that's something I continue to remind myself is people are resilient, but we're even more resilient with support from each other. So let's just create a really good jumping off point for us to like share each other's friendship and experiences.
Metaphor.
Oh, yeah. Metaphor. What is it? What is it?
All right. So I just thought about, you know how in the circus, there are those girls that use their hair, they're pulled up by their hair and stuff?
Mm-hmm, they're insane.
Well, that's another mental issue we might be able to discuss in another time.
I don't know.
What I'm getting at is, you know, a single hair is very delicate on its own, but when all of your hair is gathered together to do something like that, it becomes so much stronger, and it at some point can pull the weight of a woman, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you couldn't hold somebody up by one hair, but as you gather them all. So community, which we'll get into in part two more in depth.
Yes, there are so many good, fun things and encouraging things coming up in part two. Hopefully we haven't been too depressing, but I think it's really important that we share what we've been through and then hopefully help others.
Yeah.
And then realize that we can be, like, I can be better. Like, I can get to know my neighbors. I can get to know people on my block, and I can make connections and stop feeling sorry for myself.
Yeah.
Make a difference. So
yeah. Not wallow. Solution.
Nice. Yes. Yes. But we love you guys. Please join the family.
Yeah.
Julia mentioned our socials, but you can say it again, Julie.
Yeah, you can visit us at our website that Kelly has worked really hard on. I'm
Thomas, thank you so much. Thomas, you are everything.
I have vision, but website application is not my forte. I know what I want, but like doing it with the website stuff.
Hey, that's all Thomas. No.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thomas at Pixel Brew Co.
By the way, you should look him up. Use that picture you sent me of him with the earring. That really sweet uh-huh. one. And we need to do an About Thomas on the website.
Agreed. That's so cute. Isn't he adorable?
Yes. You finally get it. Anyway, yeah, you can visit our website.
Sorry, boys.
www.thefamilytiespodcast.com. It's a one-stop shop. Got to go there.
Yeah. Well, guys, it was wonderful spending time with you all, and hopefully this has been helpful. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up. Talk to you guys during part two coming up so soon.
Yeah. Bye.
Yep. Bye.